From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, we're going to talk about some strange things on the program. Go figure. Here's what's happening. 10 U.S. Navy sailors have been detained by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard forces when one of their boats became disabled. Now, Pentagon officials are saying the incident occurred near Farsi Island in the Persian Gulf. They said one of their two small boats had mechanical trouble, causing one or both to run aground. The sailors were then picked up by Iran and taken to the island. They may be released on Wednesday. We shall see. And the Islamic State's web of affiliates is growing faster than Al-Qaeda's ever did, according to a former top CIA official. He told Congress this on the heels of yet another attack blamed on ISIS. Michael Morrill, the President Obama's former deputy and acting CIA director, issued the warning in testimony to the House Armed Services Committee. He said the number of militant groups now swearing allegiance to ISIS has grown to cover nearly 20 countries from practically nothing a year ago. An Oregon folk singer plans to leave next week to serenade the Islamic State, and he intends to bring the black-clad terrorists a prayerful message of peace. Now, despite a warning from the State Department that his life could be in danger, James Twyman of Portland, Oregon, says he feels a calling and believes he can soften the hearts of the Islamic army known for beheading Westerners, throwing people off buildings, and executing innocent women and children. I think he needs to be careful and not go. President Barack Obama, with an eye on cementing his legacy and countering the narrative on the Republican campaign trail, has used his final State of the Union address tonight to defend his economic record and, in stark language, downplay the threat from the Islamic State. Now, we're going to get reaction from Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. And, John, say what you will, the guy's a great orator, isn't he?
Well, I don't think anybody doubts that. I mean, I think he's probably one of the most gifted orators, I think, that we've seen in our lifetime.
Yeah.
The problem is, you know, with Obama, he's an hour late and a dollar short. And here's the undercurrent theme that kind of came out toward the end of the speech, where he's kind of going through this lament of, you know, well, things could have been different, and maybe there could be less rancor, and we need to change our politics. But I don't know if you remember the date of March 23rd, 2010, what happened on that date. But on March 23rd, 2010, Obama signed the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
Over costly national legislation without one Republican vote. It was passed in the Senate with some ploys while the Democrats controlled the Senate, and passed in the House, marshaled into law by Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. And at that point, Obama destroyed his legacy and his campaign promise in 2008 that he would run a post-partisan presidency. So essentially, he allowed Pelosi and Reid, he went along with it, of course, and he has to take the responsibility for it, to hijack his entire presidency and create the most rancorous, the most divisive, the most partisan presidency of our lifetimes, far more than Bush's was. Remember, George W. Bush, despite all his problems with the Iraq War and this and that, he passed bipartisan Medicare Part D drug legislation. That was a huge piece of bipartisan legislation that was passed under Bush. Under Obama, you know, he has his legacy, which may wind up getting undone, you know, if he leaves the presidency. But I think the tragedy of Obama is he had so much potential and he squandered it because of inexperience, allowing the more senior members of the party to dictate basically what his domestic policy would be. I also think that he's grossly underestimated the necessity of a more coherent counterterrorism strategy in Iraq and Syria with ISIS. And, you know, I don't know why he doesn't use the term ISIS, which is the common term to describe the Islamic State. He uses ISIL, which is very unpopular. But here's the Here's the irony of the Obama presidency. He claims that he prevented a war in this speech by striking this Iranian deal. And here they are taking American seamen who ran aground, basically, as hostages. And whether we get them back tomorrow or whether they mess around with the U.S., which is far more likely to go on for a while. And we hope not. But we know that the Iranians are, they haven't been, all that cooperative with the U.S. But Obama, again, I think, cannot get the Syrian policy straight. It was only until December 15th, when you think about it, that Kerry met in Moscow with Putin and with the foreign minister Lavrov and finally came away from that saying, well, maybe we don't need to get rid of Bashar Assad in Syria, because that would basically repeat the same mistake in Syria that we did in Iraq and the same mistake we made in Libya, which was basically to topple Muammar Gaddafi. So what we've got with Obama is he doesn't really have a very clear foreign policy either in Syria or Iraq or anywhere else. And I think it, it's, his statements that he somehow prevented a war by somehow, agreeing with this Iranian nuke deal, is, I think it's highly questionable.
Well, and I found it interesting, John, that he did not mention at all the 10 sailors that were being held by the Iranians. Not at all. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. There's a healthcare product company called Perrigo. It has issued a voluntary recall for two of its children's cough syrups, as some of the packages containing an oral dosing cup have incorrect markings. That means the kids could take too much. Now, they say there's nothing really serious about it, except the overdose of the cough medicine leads to hyperexcitability, rapid eye movement, changes in muscle reflexes, hallucinations, vomiting, irregular heartbeat. I don't think you want that for your kid. Now, the products recalled are children's grape liquid and children's DM cherry liquid. The company, again, is called Perrigo, P-E-R-R-I-G-O. British Oil and Gas Company, BP, announcing plans to slash 5% of its global workforce in the face of continued slump in oil prices. Wow. A British man said that he figured out something was wrong when he opened a FedEx package expecting an Amazon Kindle. Instead, he got a box marked human specimen. FedEx apologized for the delivery mistake. The box apparently was supposed to go to a hospital. It contained a patient's tumor. Unbelievable. Powerball soaring to over $1.5 billion. The drawing is tomorrow night. If I win, I will share it with all of you. And if anybody else wins, do the same with us. Let's check in. What's going on in the skies with Stephen Cates? Hey, Stephen, it's kind of a quiet week in space, huh?
Well, yes, it is, George, but there's always something for our great listeners to take a look at. So we begin in the moon and look at the moon, I should say. That's waxing, and you can see that with binoculars. Take a good look along the Terminator, the light and dark line. And in a day or so, you'll actually get to see the first of the lunar landing areas that Apollo 11 went to way back when,
cool.
Sea of Tranquility. But, George, the comet that people are still watching right now, and they can still see it, the listeners can, look into the early morning sky at the tail star of the Big Dipper, and you'll get to see with binoculars, though you'll need to be in fairly dark locations to do it, this comet Catalina as it races toward the pole. But a real bright object that everybody can see right now, and I'm looking at it right now as we speak from Arizona, is the planet Jupiter, George. It's coming bright. It's becoming a really easy object to see, rising around 10:30 local time for the listeners. Telescopes will show you this most amazing banded structure. Satellites are visible, just a whole nother world. But I thought it appropriate as we begin January of the new year, talking constellations. If you look high in the southern sky, right around this time of night, maybe an hour earlier, you'll see the beautiful constellation, George, of Orion the Hunter, the star that we talked about on 2016 prediction night, the star Betelgeuse, mm-hmm. which some astronomers think could go and become a supernova now, or who knows, maybe in 100,000 years. Mm-hmm. But the real showstopper is this. If you have a pair of binoculars and haven't seen it, look at the three belt stars. Just below it is the Orion Nebula, This is amazing, George. You're looking at a star grouping where stars are created. This object about 1,350 light years away, meaning the light left around the year 1670 or 672, I should say. Just an amazing sight. And this is something, George, that the listeners can actually see, a real nebula in the sky and a most famous one. Check us out at photorecon.net for all of our aviation stuff. And, George, lots of great stuff coming in 2016.
Thank you, Stephen. Lots of things going on this planet, and we're checking in with Greg Hewlett on this next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Presidential campaigns, ISIS, all kinds of things happening on this planet. Craig Hewlett, he's the one we turn to when we need to talk about some geopolitical issues, security issues, terrorism, and here he is for 2 hours on Coast to Coast. Craig, thanks for joining us tonight. Appreciate it.
Thank you, George, and I wanted to thank you separately. I picked up three different hosts over the last couple of months off of your show, so I wanted to thank you.
Perfect.
Stephen Cates is one of them with his show, so I wanted to thank you right up front.
Well, things are, as a matter of fact, I was doing my chat tonight with our Coast Insiders, and several of them were asking me about your book, The Hydra of Carnage, asking where they can get it. Is it still in print or not?
Yeah, I've still got a small quantity left. They can get it off of our website, craigbhewlett.com.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Well, first of all, your reaction to tonight's presidential State of the Union address, his sayonara song.
Well, I'm really glad to see him go, to be honest with
really?
You.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, when everybody applauded his arrival on the scene, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, a lawyer, a constitutionalist, a professor of constitutional law, I don't think anybody thought for a minute. My reaction was immediate. I knew that he wasn't who he said he was, and I said, you'll see what happens in the next 8 years, and everything that Bush before him and Clinton before him had set in motion, he will be blamed for it. And that's precisely what the schemers at the level of global economics and global empire sought to achieve. Everything's going to be blamed on Obama, so we run around and start searching for somebody to save us. And of course, Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton, long scheduled to be our choices. But I do want to explain something. I had to do this on Carl Nelson's show. It came up about accidentally. I'm not predicting Jeb Bush would be president. I don't make predictions. Okay, I'm an analyst, the same way they do the weather. 90% today could change to 50% tomorrow. What I was trying to get across for the last 9 years when George Bush Jr. was still in the White House is that the elite are planning to put Jeb Bush in the White House with money, buying votes, and a corrupt electoral system in the primaries. I said that Hillary Clinton was already decided that she would be the one he would run against because she's vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, none of this is, you know, Craig Hewlett says this and he's going to be wrong. That's not what I'm doing. So I'm going to explain to your audience what I explained to Carl's audience inside the Beltway in Washington, D.C. Research and analysis, to me, is like Che Guevara and Mao and Lenin and Thomas Paine would argue. It's a revolutionary act. Research and analysis is a revolutionary act. You're ignoring the status quo. You're independently researching what they're telling you is the truth, and your analysis comes out differently. This is exactly what governments don't want to see. And all I'm doing is taking my argument, my analysis, the way a lawyer would, to take it into the courtroom to make my argument. I'm trying to convince people that this is a setup. This is theater. You're being lied to. But nothing happens in government by accident. Nothing. If you look right now, the name escapes me, but there's an author, the editor of Newsweek, is writing a book about George Bush and the Bush family. It's just come out. And he admits during the interview on Medved, he admits that he started the book 9 years ago, and it's just being released now.
Jeez.
Now, is that a coincidence that he started a book while George Bush Jr. was in the White House to promote the dynasty of George Bush Sr., Jr., and coincidentally, simultaneously, when Jeb Bush is running for the White House? No.
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing. So what I'm saying is, I am doing everything I can, and I have been for years, to make it clear that Jeb Bush cannot take the White House. The American people have to wake up and see this manipulation. Now, I don't care who wins. I honestly don't care. It doesn't make any difference to me. I don't look at things that
way. Well, when you say you don't care,
because it
explain
doesn't matter.
That. Okay. That's
it doesn't matter if it's Cruz, if Hillary were to be win, she gets indicted, Obama will pardon her, she'll never do jail time. Let's grow up about our politics and stop being quite as immature as we've been to date. These are ruthless men. Obama is a ruthless man. Jeb Bush is ruthless. We should know by now how ruthless Hillary Clinton is.
What about Trump? Does he fit into that?
Trump is an anomaly only in that he's a malignant narcissist. And he'll do anything to promote, self-promote himself mm-hmm. in the face of enormous odds.
I think he's having fun right now.
Oh, heaven, Jeff. Most malignant narcissists are having fun with us. That's the problem. Does he really want to be president? Oh, I can't answer that. I wouldn't mind him being president, but for the same reason I wanted Ross Perot to stay in the race and split the two parties into an independent.
Sure.
33% of the vote to each one. They have to take the election to the Congress. And, oh, my gosh, all these talk show hosts will discover, I guess we really aren't just Democrats and Republicans. There's something else going on. And that's the only thing Donald Trump can achieve.
Well, now, what happens, Craig, if during these primaries, the Iowa caucuses, the New Hampshire primary, what happens if Trump starts pulling away there? I still think it's going to be a brokered convention. And I think you're right. I think Jeb Bush is going to get the nomination.
Well, that's because there's people out there that most people, unless you became aware of him early on in the early days, going back 25 years, there are people out there, a lot of people out there, like Karl Rove. And Karl Rove is out there right now, and he's hitting all the states, and he's basically bribing, buying, extolling, extorting, whatever it takes to get Bush the nomination. He's going after the delegates. This is common practice. And where it's really crucial, you'll see people like Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller. This isn't conspiracy theory, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is the way our politics has been run as a two-party system.
Well, if he wins in the caucus, if he shows up in New Hampshire, all of a sudden, when he shouldn't, I'm going to say, you know what? He's on his way.
He's on his way. But it'll be money that's buying it. It'll be money that puts him in the White House. And I'm not saying, you know, I hope I'm wrong. I don't want to see another Bush or a Clinton. But I don't see anybody challenging the machinery that I've come to understand for 30 years.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I've got one of our predictors, John Hoag, who's going to be on with me on Thursday. He has said since the get-go, Hillary versus Jeb Bush. Now, he does it through the eyes of a psychic, and he's a darn good one, Craig. But he's been saying that for 4 years.
Well, you know, no matter how you come to the truth, if you really are seeking the truth, I don't care where you begin, you're going to all end up on the same team. If you're honest with yourself.
Yeah.
So that doesn't surprise me very much. But again, this is not what I want to see happen. This is what's going to happen because the two-party system is a completely corrupted system, guaranteed to leave in the hands of the elite, the oligarchy, one of the two parties. They don't care which, they buy them both, but it'll be people that are malleable to the system, and nothing will ever change.
The president tonight ignored the 10 sailors that have been basically taken by the Iranians. He didn't mention it at all. How come?
Well, I think, and this is my opinion, just watching him all these years now, his Tuesday morning meetings where he decides who in the entire world gets to die by a cruise missile or a drone. It's called Bloody Tuesday inside the Beltway. Obama does not respect the military. He hasn't mentioned the 22,000 veterans, combat veterans, that have come home, suffer PTSD, and have been summarily removed with a less than honorable discharge, so they
can't get their benefits.
Treatment at the VA hospitals. Yeah. 22 suicides a day, American veterans. Homelessness, incarceration, abandonment. Our veterans are being treated far worse today than I was as a Vietnam veteran. In fact, I look back, I'm being spit on at the airport.
I remember those days. Craig, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more. You know, we had our coast-to-coast chat tonight with Coast Insiders, and Buck from Limestone, West Virginia, wanted me to read this to you. So I will. It says, I recently had open-heart surgery and really do not know how I would have survived the hospital chaos without the archives and the earbuds of being a Coast Insider. Turned a lot of hospital personnel on the coast, which was a plus. When I was discharged, they were listening to Coast at the nurse's station in the ICU. That's the absolute truth. You can use this. His real name's Dan. Thank you. Okay, here we go. Back with Craig Hewlett. Craig, the Iranians taking 10 sailors. I assume they're going to release them, but you just never know. Why would they want to even keep them?
They wouldn't want to keep them. I think they're flexing their muscles. And like I said early on when this so-called agreement was made with Iran, they're not going to stick to the agreement. I think what Obama was doing, and I think this is bearing out the accuracy of it, Obama was doing what he was doing with Iran in hopes that Iran wouldn't go further into the Russian, India, Chinese camp, which had just recently, just before the incident, signed a first-ever military agreement. China is opening a military base in northern Africa as we speak.
That's right, first one.
The first one. So, you know, there's developments going on, and the American people really don't understand geopolitics anymore because it's only been this kind of political setup since the Soviet Union collapsed. Since 1990, everything has changed, and it's very difficult to keep up at this point. So if you weren't up to speed when Bush Sr. was in the White House, it's pretty difficult to stay abreast of what's going on. But we are at war. America, unfortunately, an America that doesn't represent you and I any longer, but an America that the effects of what happens will affect us domestically. There's a war going on. The Chinese want to back the yuan with gold. Russia want to issue currency in the Balkans with 9 different nations backed by gold. The BRICS nation combined, China's been accepted into the IMF. These are wars on the Federal Reserve note. Now, that doesn't mean it's a war on you and I, but it is a war on the global regime of economic interdependence, the corporate elite, the corporate regime that has taken away American sovereignty, and every trade agreement takes away all the rest of the nation's sovereignty. That's what this is about. Russia, China, India, South Africa, some of the Latin American countries, they're not going to tolerate the invasion of U.S. Western military might and regime change any longer. Now, what is Obama going to do? Nothing. Obama's going to leave the White House. I suggest that he will move to the Arab Emirates in Dubai.
You really think so?
Yes, he's going to buy a $5 million house on the seaside, and one day you'll see pictures of him in white robes looking like a Saudi prince.
You really think so?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
I think he's a liar. I think he's a brilliant liar, much, much better than Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was a terrible liar.
Yeah, he was.
He was pitiful. Anybody that spent 10 minutes on the street as a human being or a cop on the beat could tell very rarely could Bill Clinton lie, and you couldn't see the tells. Obama is a master at lying because he is, in my opinion, a true sociopath.
So what's going on with terrorism? You know, some people say it's made up, it's not real, yet people are getting killed. Something's happening. What's your take, Craig?
Say that again, the first part.
People say that terrorism isn't real, that it's all concocted.
Well, it is to some degree. There's a theory in criminology that was formulated by a criminologist out of South Africa. His name was Stanley Cohen. He came up with a theory of what is called moral panic in criminology. And it's where the government, working in hand with the major media, create enemies, and to be believable enough, they create enemies that are untrue. These are untrue enemies. But they create an enemy believable enough to the American people in this instance that we will let the government move in with law enforcement, rules, regulations, Guantanamo Bay camps, brutal, brutal street enforcement is going to get far, far worse. That's what we're seeing with ISIS. Everybody forgets that Wesley Clark, Craig Hewlett, and a dozen other CIA and intelligence analysts talked about ISIS in the very beginning, that it was created by the United States, two or three major allies in the intelligence community.
Oh, and by the way, update, breaking news. The 10 American sailors being held by Iran are now being questioned. So they haven't let them go yet.
Well, Iran isn't an ignorant nation. You have to understand, these people have played politics for 3,000 years. They're not likely to play this lightly. And Vladimir Putin, he will back them. Not because he's a friend of them, not because he's evil. Vladimir Putin is taking on the global regime, the corporate regime that I've talked about for 30 years. He knows what it is. And he's drawn a line in the sand. China is backing him. And he just said recently, ISIS was the creation of the West, and he named at the G20 meeting in Turkey which nation states and corporations were buying the bootleg oil from ISIS, and it didn't get any American press.
Well, that is something I've been talking about for months now, Craig. Who's buying the oil? What banks are behind it?
Well, that's exactly what Putin did at the G20 meeting. And as it took place, he showed slides, he made demonstrations, he showed the intel to the G20, he pointed fingers at which nation states, corporations, and individuals were involved in it. He named them. It went around. None of that got covered in the American press.
I mean, they've got to have ships.
They've got thousands of tankers, ships, everything. Excuse me.
Yeah, that's okay. And
none of this would be happening without a NATO ally like Turkey.
And who are the workers, the oil workers, you know, working on the rigs, the platforms, and the oil wells?
Anybody that will pay them. Most of them are foreign workers. That's what America doesn't understand, is when we start prospecting oil and building the wells, the delivery system, the refineries, the American corporations hire people from the Philippines, from Malaysia, to do the work.
Hard, cheap labor.
And if they get blown up or killed by terrorists, if the pipeline is destroyed, nobody cares. The other part is you and I pay for it because we have U.S. Western government insurance covering their losses. They don't pay for the losses. You and I pay for the losses. You really have to see the maps differently. When you look at a map and you see Syria with a border with Turkey and Iraq, in the minds of the elite, the ruling elite right now, what are referred to as the oligarchy, not just by me, but by two professors in Switzerland, Martin Gillens and Benjamin Page. Look them up. They tested a theory of American politics and proved satisfactory under peer review that we are run by an oligarchy, and they explain why. But you have to understand, that means the very system they're talking about, that I've been talking about, means nation-state boundaries and sovereignty are already history. We're not losing it. It's over.
They are talking about $20 oil, $15 oil. How low can it go?
Well, Saudi Arabia has declared war on its competitors. They can do this for a very long time.
And just put them out of business. Just put them out of business.
It's already putting out of business American domestic oil production.
Yes.
Yes. It's hurting some of the majors. They'll recover. But we are at war. We're at war with the dollar. We're at war over oil prices. We're at war over international finance. We're at war about sovereign nation state sovereignty and who decides domestically.
Shouldn't we be seeing even lower prices at the pump, and we're not?
Well, we should, but we all know that that's a manipulation and a lie.
Of course.
The prices will go up in the spring when the Winnebagoes are broken out.
Yeah, that's right.
But you understand, nothing we see is true any longer, and it hasn't been for 30 years. It's not. 30 years ago, it wasn't this bad. I mean, there were people in America 30 years ago that would tune into a show like this, and our phones would ring for 2 weeks.
That's true.
But that's not true any longer. 30 years of this, I think, is flat wore the American people out. We
desensitized.
Do nothing but backpedal and lose.
Yeah, they're desensitized now.
So when I start arguing about the sovereignty of the nation state being lost, people start immediately intervening and they want me to shut up and say what the solution is. I'm sorry, I have no solution. Don't ask me for a solution. I'm neither a tyrant nor a fool. I don't believe there is a solution. I'm a Nietzschean, and you probably don't understand really what that means. But as an existentialist, I understand that the things happen in the world you can't do anything about. You can worry beads and pray to Allah. You can do whatever mm-hmm. you want. But in the end, certain things will happen because certain other things have already taken place.
And there's no sense getting sick over it.
No, it isn't worth losing sleep over.
No.
But I spent 30 years this as my bedside reading, and I can tell you, our nation state sovereignty is history. And if someone in the House and the Senate does not come forward, somebody running for president, for instance, and tell the American people some bald-faced truths, then I have no respect for them. I keep hearing Elizabeth Warren and Rand Paul, and I'm sorry. If they don't tell the American people that the House and the Senate in the United States have abdicated their authority to negotiate trade agreements in violation of the Constitution they swore to uphold, then I'm not going to sit here and say, yeah, but Elizabeth Warren cares, and Rand Paul, I think he really cares. No, none of them care. None of them care enough to come out and say, I'm a member of a corrupt oligarchy myself, because we're not negotiating trade agreements on behalf of the American people. Are bankers, lawyers, and lobbyists at the World Trade Organization are usurping U.S. sovereignty. They're going to tell us what we can and can't do, who we can and can't sue, and the price of goods and services forever.
When does the New World Order truly kick in?
It already has. It already has. When the international governing organizations, IGOs, begin to dictate who can sue over what issues, and when our own Supreme Court says that a corporation that's making these decisions for us without the consent or participation of the constitutionally bound Congress, it's already over. All we're doing now is seeing how deep the slippery slope runs. But pretty soon you won't be able to even question the meat, the fish, in a package that you purchase.
GMOs, everything.
These corporations, like Archer Daniels, Midland, Monsanto, these corporations make Hitler's political organization look like lightweights. There's no greater tyranny than a monopoly, multinational corporation.
How did we let it happen? It didn't slip in.
No, I think Carol Quigley, if you read Tragedy and Hope, when he gets to the part about the 60s and stuff, he kind of points out that right after World War II, the American people were pretty wore out. An awful lot of young men, good men, a great generation in my opinion, were slaughtered. And I think after World War II, at least Quigley points out, you know, toaster ovens, TV, refrigerators, we were looking to party, and we didn't want to face reality anymore. But the corporate businessmen that FDR put into power, he knew they would be ruthless, money-hungry, and reap enormous profits illegally.
And they did.
But he knew they would. His attitude was, let them reap rewards. We'll win the war against Germany and Japan, and then I'll get rid of these guys. But he died.
And there was nobody left to
Truman
fix it.
Wasn't capable of facing those businessmen because he was a little small businessman himself, and he looked at GE and Ford Motor and GM and AT&T that they were free enterprisers. They were the embodiment of Adam Smith. And Adam Smith himself said nothing could be further than the truth. You let corporations get this large and allow them to create monopolies in any industry, he said combinations, he would call them combinations, would occur to repress wages, health insurance on labor, and monopolize an industry and destroy competition. Adam Smith said that, not Karl Marx.
And that was a long time ago.
Yes. So, you know, it's sad that America won the war and these men became powerful, but they were men you would readily recognize, like, for instance, Prescott Bush, Brown Brothers Harriman, the bank that was indicted by the Treasury Department during the war for trading with the enemy.
It helped the Nazis.
Germany.
That's right. He funded the Nazis for a while, didn't they?
And when the war ended, they dropped the case against him. Hans Morgenthau personally dropped the case against Brown Brothers Harriman and Prescott Bush. But the American people, after World War II, my father was one of them. He was one of them. He simply wouldn't allow politics in the home. They couldn't be discussed. It wasn't allowed. He read Zane Grey and comic books and watched football. Everybody wanted to party. I get it. I understand.
Right.
But now we are suffering the backlash, the real blowback.
But I think, Craig, people are the same. They don't want to know about it. They want to stick their heads in the sand and pretend it's not happening.
Well, Taylor Caldwell, a great novelist, wrote Captains and the King, and wrote a lot about the multinational defense contractors, the warmongers of World War I and World War II. She suggested that the American people would not become alert to what's happening in this country until they were burying the dead. And then they would ask, why didn't someone warn us?
Mm-hmm. But it's too late then.
It is too late, and I think it's too late now. I'm not going to stop doing what I do until I'm dead, but I'm not going to lie to your audience or you, George. I think it is over, and we're going to have to suffer some terrible times at the hands of these corporate oligarchs. We're going to suffer, and they are ruthless. I'm telling you, I was in the boardrooms with them. I worked for Jack Metcalf. I saw their reaction to Jack Metcalf when he opposed policies coming out of those boardrooms to be implemented by Congress illegally, trade agreements. And Jack stood up to him. But every time he gave one of my speeches, the limos would be pulling up at the Everett office.
That's right. I think those days are gone, Craig.
Yeah, I don't see Rand Paul doing anything the way his father did it. And I don't blame him. I'm not going to blame him. I think it's gone so far that there really is a genuine fear of speaking out. It doesn't even have to be genuine.
No,
the fear of speaking out, even if it's just a notion.
Are you concerned?
Speaking out, me?
Yeah.
Not the least.
Why not?
I've got a lot of friends in the military, the intelligence community. I've been a consultant to ATF, DEA, and for a bit, Secret Service, on and off for 30 years. You know, if they want to come for me, it's going to be an embarrassing effort, I have to tell you.
Well, you'll be calling us first on the air while they're chasing you.
Well, everybody understands how I live. I live out in the wilderness, way out in the wilderness, and I have 7 chows. I got the best alarm system you can imagine.
You sure do. Stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment, Craig, and take some phone calls with you. And, of course, Craig's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And you can get a few of his books that are left, The Hydra of Carnage. Somebody said on Amazon, somebody was trying to sell one to make a fortune. Craig's got them for you on his website. Not a lot, but it's well worth reading. We're going to come back in a moment. If you need to email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. And, yep, we're into social media. So like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Right here on Coast to Coast AM. One more hour to go with Craig Hewlett. We'll take your phone calls as we continue chatting with him about world events that affect you, whether you know it or not.